Evening, gents. Good to see you all. There's my man. Good to see you, John.
How's it going, Gav?
Good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, good.
Good, man. John's munching away. Good job. We're talking about fat loss tonight. Getting his calories in while he's on the call. Good man. How are you doing? You're on your iPhone. Are you going to be driving shortly? I'm not sure of your name. You haven't got your name in the chat. SMD iPhone.
Oh yeah, hey, it's Seth.
Seth Drew.
Yes, man. How are you?
Good to see you, man. I'm well.
Good. Is my video coming through or no?
Yeah, I got you.
Oh, okay. Cheers. Okay.
Got you, mate. All good. So I'm just gonna let a few more people in. I'm trying to multitask. I can never multitask, gents. Like this is gonna be a wild one in a second. Let me see who else is in. Paul, Jeff. Paul, good to see you, man. Des, give us an update, man. What's going on in your world?
Just dodging away mobility wise, noticing some
Still
big
climbing
changes.
at it?
Yeah, still doing it every day, so it's there's light at the end of the tunnel. I can feel it, so it's getting exciting that I can start implementing that into the golf swing and whatnot.
Love it, mate. Like, mate, it's just one of those things where sometimes you've got to spend just a little bit more time on it. And it's one of those things we always shy away from sometimes because it can be a little bit boring. But there's
Definitely.
a few little things that I used to do, just implementing them inside workouts as well. So in my rest periods, I would put stretches in place there, you know. So instead of resting and just sat down, I'll like update the phone or on the training app, wherever it is, and I'll just after I've done that, I'll go through a stretch that I know is going to benefit me on another day, or it's going to complement something else in the workout, you know. So
Andrew's actually literally just implemented like a bunch of L-DOAs in my workouts before sets and stuff. So, but yeah, I've kind of grown to enjoy it now as opposed to hate it, just because it kind of internalizes you quite a bit, and that helps for quite a bit of stuff.
man. Yeah, and sometimes it's a lot of what we need, right? So I know we're gonna talk about fat loss in a minute, but it's a good place to start. Like, it's a lot of the time, it's a lot of what we need, especially even when we think about a fat loss phase. Because a lot of the time, we do need to calm our nervous system down a little bit. Because typically in a fat loss phase, everybody's like, boom, rampant, pushing the sympathetic pedal as much as possible, right? So we have to think about stress in a way where dieting is a stress, training is a stress, right? Morning, Nathaniel. Good to see you, man. All of those things are a stress, right? So the more stress we're gonna have pushed on top of us, the more we sometimes need to put the brake on a little bit and put those parasympathetic brakes on a touch, you know. So that can then help recovery to push harder in those training sessions, right? So sometimes we have to do meditation and the breath work. And how many of you guys are doing breath work or meditation right now? Just show your hands on the video. Yes. Good. Good, good. So let me just let Judy in. So we've got some questions. So I asked some of you guys to drop some questions in the WhatsApp group, which I've got written down here. So we'll definitely address those. And some of them will be intermingled in with what I'm going to say anyway and talk about. So I've got some notes here from the questions, which is good. And I think Judy's on. We've got Austin's in as well. Can't see all of you on video just yet, but if you have got a chance to whack your videos on, boys, that'd be great. Jody, man, how you doing, brother?
Hi, very good. Are you?
Good, good, my man. Good to see you. How's
Good to see
Costa
you too.
Rica?
Hot. It's very sunny, hot.
Mate. I can't wait to come back, man. It's freezing in the well. It's not freezing in the UK. It's getting a little bit warmer now, but it's nowhere near Costa Rica standard. Trust me, it's not good.
No.
Good, good. There's a few more heading in. Bills just ended. I've got a good packed house tonight, boys, which is good. Okay, so let's kick it off. What I'd love to start with is in the chat, if you get chance, if I know Richard, you're driving, so this isn't for you, brother. Okay. Maybe you can, if you can unmute yourself, that'd be good. If you can't, no problem. But I'd love in the chat a win you've had in the past week. Could be training, could be home life, could be anything that's going on personally or training wise, that's fine. I want a win that you've had in the last 7 days. If we can see that in the chat, or if one of you wants to unmute yourself while the rest are chatting, pop it in the chat, that'd be good. I want to say you're all getting on. John, how's your rotator cuff coming?
That's what I was typing.
Yeah.
This is the surgical side.
Okay.
That's 2 months out, 9 weeks out. I'd say that's
Nice.
pretty good.
It's good, man. So Greg's got a few bits coming supporting you in the program for that, yeah.
Yeah, he's doing a great job.
Good, man. We have discussions about you guys when we're training and making sure we're all on track with it. So we always throw some ideas around and we're making sure we're all on top of each other as coaches supporting you, you know. Let me see. Seth, been struggling to get to 190, crept up to 197, back down to 193 as of this AM. Okay, man. We'll address a few bits of this. To be honest, man, Greg in your corner, he'll have you dialed in for a lot of things, but I might start touching on a few bits in this call. Based off things we might be able to implement for you further down the line, which might be coming soon. I won't dive into too much information on that type of testing, but we'll touch on a few bits of genetics tonight, right? So I know a few people have got their genetics tested before, but things like that I'll highlight in the talk tonight, where we can look at how your genetics play a factor in fat loss. I know Austin's got some questions on using modifying like recipes and stuff to make that sweet tooth a little bit, the cravings drop down a touch, and there's certain avenues which I'll touch on tonight that might highlight a few things there. But Seth, with the going up to 197, then back down to 193 from that 190, how long was that over? What time period?
Yeah, so it was just like a 2 week period, 2 or 3 week period. Just being out and about and eating and birthday parties and it's easier when you're at home all the time and when you're not. So as I'm getting ready to fly out on Friday for a week skiing, so we'll see how that works.
Where are you skiing?
Out in Colorado, Steamboat.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
Nice.
my youngest and I
Beautiful
going up
place, man.
there.
If you're going there with your youngest man, you're going to have a good time. So make sure you do that for sure. Prioritize that. Good family time. But with like things like your body weight creeping up to 197, then back down to 193 over a 2 week period, how much did your body composition change in that time? Was it relatively the same?
I would say it's relatively the same. I'm making great strides with in the gym. So we changed up the workout. I'm on a new routine and everything's gotten, lifting more and feeling stronger like in the last 30 days. So I probably looked my best about 2 or 3 weeks ago when I sent in my sexy pictures to Greg.
Mate,
Yeah.
I've actually seen them. They're very
Yeah.
impressive. You've done very,
Yeah.
very well. Hats off to you, brother. That's great. It's a great job. But
Yeah, thank you. Thank
my main focus on that is like sometimes when things like that happen. So let's say, for example, Christmas period or there's a birthday party, anniversaries, things like this will always crop up. And when we do go and enjoy ourselves and just let loose that a little bit more, expecting body weight to go up is probably an expectation to be set in your mind straight away, because one, you're going to be eating foods that are potentially not normally in your diet plan, or things that you eat on a consistent basis if you're following the healthier lifestyle approach, let's say, right? So typically those foods will come with a lot of more carbohydrates than normal, a lot more fat than normal, but a lot more salt than normal as well. So I always look at those three things that are typically in those foods. And when you're combining something like sodium, salt with carbohydrates, your body weight is going to fluctuate pretty quick, right? But it also means it's going to come down pretty quick as well. Because as soon as you go back, like you just seen, you put on 7 pounds and lost four in the space of a few days. So things like that, I always look at in terms of one, those three things I just mentioned, salt, carbohydrates, obviously fat are going to be part of that as well. but also food volume. So it's typically more food you eat on top of that as well, right? So you've got all of that in place. So every gram of carbohydrate, your body's going to hold about 3 to 4 grams of water. You add salt to that mix, you're going to hold more. You add more food volume to that mix, your body weight's going to go up even more because you've got more food in your digestive system at one go. So like I always try and be sort of on a, and what's the word I'm trying to think of? I try and play the safe ground first and think of all the lowest hanging fruits that could possibly be the problem. Because if you're going to put on, let's say, 1 pound of fat, right? I'm going to use kilos because me and Des are from the UK here. So we're going to go kilos. So if I'm going to put on a kilo of, here we go, Rob. There you go. He's in as well. If you're going to put on a kilo of body fat, you're going to have to eat about 7,700 calories around. So give or take. So it could be between 7,000, 8,000 calories on top of your maintenance calories. So if you're going to do that in a day, that's a lot of damn food. Like the only person I can think off the top of my head that eat that amount would probably be Ben when he was competing. Like, and that guy can put a lot of calories away, right? But he was training a lot. His body weight was way higher than what it is right now, right? So to eat that amount of food on top of your maintenance calories is a hard task. You could do it over a week easily, right? So you could put on a kilo in a week, but you'd have to be consistently, mindfully eating that amount, which I'm sure when you break it down, you go, well, actually, I probably didn't overeat that amount if you're conscious of what you're doing, right? So it's typically those combinations of things that can just drive that body weight up a little bit more. Now you may feel softer, you may feel like your body composition feel a little bit different, but it's not that you put on lots of body fat. It's just that amount of body weight is from those things first. Now here's the kicker: if you're not mindful of that and you don't keep that composure and that thing in your brain going, actually calm yourself down. It's not going to go out of whack, or I'm not out of kilter, so to speak. If people don't realize that, they go, the plan ain't working. Fuck it. I'm just going to go and eat whatever. Right. And then it does become an issue and a problem. And you do end up eating 7,700 calories in one go. Right. Now, so I'm just still letting people into the room. I think they're having a hard time coming in. Does that make sense, Seth? Is
Sure. Yep.
that probably what happened over that time period as well?
It is, and you can easily let it get in your head, right? Hey, I'm working, I'm doing all this stuff, working as hard as I can, and it's the scale when I get on in the morning, it's going the wrong way. I mean, I know everything you just said is everything I did.
And Greg would probably do this as well. He'd be like, Seth, we gotta dial this in. Let's cut these things back and make sure. And in those moments, it's not going the other way and just pulling everything aggressively. It's probably just going, just stick to normal. It'll drop off in the next few days. But in that moment, I don't beat myself up for it. I just go, what PBs could I hit in the gym now? Because now I've got some stored energy to put to use here because I've got stored glycogen back in the system. I've got, do you know what I mean? I'm like, you're probably going to hit some PBs over those next few days as well.
Yeah, it's funny that you say that, and I don't want to hog the call, but it's funny that you say that. So, like, if I try to go the other way and like not eat breakfast or skip breakfast and lunch or something, then I'm so hungry I eat so much later that I actually weigh more the next day if I just had, followed my plan.
Yeah, man. So I'll touch on one of the genes that affects that can affect that type of thing as well. Because I noticed Judy was mentioning intermittent fasting, which I'm not against at all. There are benefits of fasting due to increases in Archimansia in the gut, which can help the gut lining and so on. So things like that can be used. Again, everything's a tool in the toolbox too. But I always consider your response to that type of stuff as well, which so Jody, I'm definitely going to touch on that today for you, brother. Okay. I just want to go through some of these wins here. So Jeff, increased watts for a 5 minute bike, 10% over the last 3 months. Mate, that's awesome. Like the wattages on those bikes are great. They're great indicators of performance and power output that you can deliver. And they're fast to change as well. So over 3 months, an increase in 10% is great. Good job, man. Rob, you've got increase your decline dumbbell press, 34 kgs for 10, 4 sets. Damn. Nice. So more hypertrophy and body comp for you at the minute, Rob, yeah?
Yeah, I've been on a lot of body comp stuff with Andrew, so triple sets and giant sets and full body work. And now we're just starting to, now the body fat's come right down and still got a bit more to go, but starting to introduce a few more kind of strength hypertrophy, which is just a bit fun again. It's like, I
Yeah,
don't know,
man.
it's ego driven, but like the 34s are on the bottom rack of the dumbbells. That's nice, you know, like get off the top rack and get into the bottom rack and start working your way up them.
Yeah, so it's when you, especially when you go through those superset methods and the trisets and giant sets, I'm a big fan of those. I like to use them for fat loss for sure. Like those are some of the things you can use. Now, when you use them in fat loss depends, right? So if you can use a high amount of volume to do that in a big deficit, can be a tough ask. Like your cravings could typically go through the roof depending on how you're doing it, but I typically start with those at the start of a diet. If you're going into a like a moderate deficit, that you've got way more energy in the tank to push for those types of things. But as the calories then potentially need to come down, that's when the volume comes down, and then obviously intensity goes up. So you're lifting more heavy weights then. So it may be a nice, especially a nice time as well to move into the hypertrophy stuff when your body fat's obviously dropped, because you can start, you're more insulin sensitive, you can handle more carbohydrates, you can build a little bit more. But yeah, that's it's a great way to start building work capacity as well. So I like it in the fat loss phases as well to build work capacity, number one. So the benefits of that leading into a hypertrophy training protocol now, Rob, if you build work capacity, you're going to train the brain. Not even, no, you're not training the brain. I shouldn't say that. You're training the cardiovascular system to withstand more. So one of the things that's going to downregulate motor unit recruitment, remember, is once that the brain can sense there's a deficiency in cardiovascular efficiency. So when you get tired and you breathe harder, the brain senses like, okay, I'm getting tired now. Energy's dropping. I'm not getting as much oxygen to the cells. It's going to downregulate motor unit recruitment. So the more cardiovascular fit you are, or the more recovery you have, and the more work capacity you have, the later that kicks in. So the more load you're going to lift, the more reps you're going to perform at that given load. Obviously, there's going to be a need to go in and out of strength training as well to make sure the loads are going up again stronger, and then you come back and then you can hit more work for that given load, relative load then as well. So that's a good indication of why you may want to do those things as well intermittently in your training programs, like go in and out of those types of training protocols. The other one then is also pain tolerance. Like I'm sure when you go through a full like a 6, 12, 25 or giant sets on the same body part, you build up so much lactate, which is again, it's going to help cardiovascular system, it's going to help lactate buffering. But I like it because it enables you to handle pain more often. And the other side of downregulating motor unit recruitment is that pain sensation. So when the body senses that pain and that burning, it's like, oof. Downregulate motor unit recruitment. So it's not going to enable you to keep pushing and recruiting those muscle fibers. But the more you've trained at, it's like, yep, I got it, no problem. Right. So when we ask, why did you end a set? Pain then isn't one of those things. It was uncomfortable, so I stopped. Well, no, like you can take it, you know. So that's a good sign, man. So I'll be looking forward to seeing those pics soon, brother. Judy, working on improving your deep sleep, which has been a problem. So you started to improve your deep sleep, Judy?
Yes, I am trying to, first of all, get the 8 hours of sleep.
Nice.
I'm also avoiding screens 1 or 2 hours before bed.
Nice, man.
It is working, but still, it should improve more.
Yeah. So you let's start with yourself because you're actually on the call. Like we're chatting right now, based off this win with your sleep as well. So, this is a good time to bring up the intermittent fasting thing. So, I'd ask you a question on: do you like intermittent fasting, or do you find it beneficial for you? Is it easy for you to use in the day, and so on?
It is not that I really like it, it's just convenient for my schedule
Yeah.
because usually for me it's easy to skip breakfast because due to work schedule. So it's not that I like it because I like to get breakfast. It's just that I find it convenient. That would be the best part.
Yeah, okay. So there's actually now this may not be be your gene back by any means, but there's a with genetics, you have to look at I'm going to talk a few on a few genetics tonight because I honestly think it has a big impact or can have a big impact on fat loss. And I like to look at the individual in front of me first, and I'll look at the environment they create around themselves. So whatever you've done before you came to us, or you before you started your fat loss journey and so on, gives me a good indication of why you're in that place, right? And the choices you made before that, right? And then obviously the environment you create during the training cycles or whatever you're going to go through. So that's going to give us a good indication of things, but also how you respond and like those little subjective things when we talk to you. Tell me about this. How do you feel in this situation? Those things give us a good indication, right? So there's a gene. It's actually called the clock gene. Okay, so it's circadian locomotive output, something else ending with a C. And it's actually called the clock gene, but it's also around circadian rhythms. So people with this SNP in this gene, typically they have a lower effect on sleep, so like deep sleep and things like that. So they automatically have an issue with that. Now, the issue with that is it can alter your satiety and hunger hormones. So going longer periods in the morning can then ramp up hunger throughout the rest of the day. I think, Seth, you mentioned if you miss meals and you get hungry towards the end of the day, like that could potentially be a genetic thing as well. And especially if you struggle with sleep. So what's going to happen then if you're intermittent fasting, you'll tend to backload the calories towards the end of the day. And now you've got a lot of food in your system you're trying to digest, which will then reduce the amount of deep sleep you get into because your body's upping the or keeping the system up to digest the food that's in the system. That makes sense. So you're not going to effectively get a big, big deep sleep with that. So that's why sometimes you've obviously heard Ben say multiple times that eating a few hours away from bed just allows that digestive system to calm itself down. The body starts to relax a little bit better and so on. So those things can have an effect. But then you also have to consider, well, convenience with your job. So it's not that you shouldn't do intermittent fasting. It might be that you have a shorter window to do things in. And that would then give you working with certain time periods in the morning, Jody, where it might be like instead of eating at 12 or 1, could you just front end it to like 10:30, 11? That might give you a little bit more time throughout the afternoon and early evening, but also high dosing protein then as well. So getting as much protein in early as you can be a great effect. So when we look at like even studies on protein intake, people think you've got to have multiple exposures. To be honest, I used to advise this a lot until I started looking at even more studies that are coming out. So we're always updating the research on this type of stuff. But like getting four feedings of protein, obviously depending on total amount of protein you have in the day, but typically you'd want to see a spike and then let it come back down again. And then you got another spike of protein. So you're constantly stimulating muscle protein synthesis if you want to keep all the muscle tissue. But there's also a study now showing that eating 100 grams of protein in one sitting consistently saw a linear dose increase of muscle protein synthesis over a 12-hour period. So it's not that you have to have smaller feedings and spike them. This one showed a continual rise for 12 hours, and it was a 40% bigger increase than having like a 25 gram protein meal, I believe. Rob. 100 protein, yeah, protein bomb after a workout. Man, like it's a huge amount. I'll see if I can find the study for you guys, and I'll post in the WhatsApp group. But that was pretty eye-opening. But that's the way I'd frame it, man. Jody, I would think if it's working for you and you're seeing benefits in the deep sleep, then that's no problem. And just having dark environments, like setting the t like it's tough for you, Costa Rica, because I know it's hot, but if you can get that temperature as a bit lower, as low as you can, that's going to help. And just a few hours away from bed for the last feed before bed would be a good indication of a deep sleep.
Okay, but right now I am not doing intermittent fasting. I was just asking because I have heard that it's a good technique for some people to lose fat very quickly.
Yeah,
But
so
right now I am not trying it.
Perfect. It can be, man, for sure. Those are considerations I think of, though, as well. Especially the reason I said that as well was due to the deep sleep thing with the clock, because that can have an effect with intermittent fasting. So, because if you have that shorter window in the morning where you extend the fast out and then you're eating more calories throughout the rest of the day and you're backloading those calories, that can affect sleep. But if it doesn't, all intermittent fasting is going to do is just shorten that time period where you, if you stick to that the time where you only eat in those hours, you're going to be so full in those hours. And then as soon as that clock's done, boom, you don't eat. So essentially, you're just condensing food into one window of period of time. So you can manage your calories a little bit better. And that's where I would probably bolus dose that protein amount, because eating 100 grams of protein in one go, like it's a lot of food. It's a lot of protein, man. It'll keep you full for a long time, especially if you start, like, I think Ben's probably said this quite a few times, but trying to get a good 75% of your protein done by the first half of the day, you'll notice your satiety is high. Like you're not hungry for the rest of the day. You control it way better. So that first feeding, if you want to try a Jody, then make that like the 100 gram one and see how you get on with that.
Okay, great.
Good, man.
Thank you. Thank you for your inputs.
No problem, brother. Yeah, so there was a few on like things like that with genetics we would start to take a look at too. And there are tests that you can test on these things. But those are good indications. And it's not to say that it's a problem. It just shows us the environment we can create for you to make things easier and set up your environment for success, right? So if you take a look at my genetics where I've had mine tested, Greg's actually running his eyes over them now, and there's specific supplements that I need to take based off my genetics, which will help me with inflammation and oxidative stress and all of these things. So it just helps my body recover from the training I'm going to do. It helps me with flight, like flying all around the world, because that's going to do certain things for oxidative stress. So when I do travel, there's upregulation of certain supplements that's going to help me control that as well, right? So things like that will happen. And I think Austin's in. He had a question where with the foods, I think he was talking about making the foods a little bit sweeter. Oh, my battery died then. Yeah, so Austin was asking about making like Diet Cokes or Diet Dr. Peppers, I think, protein shakes, and making like the ice creams and or the low calorie ice creams in the blenders. And I think the Ninja Creamy probably he's talking about, maybe. Yeah, Ninja Creamy. If that's around like 10 to 15% of your calories for the day and it allows you to stay on point with those calories, then if it's working, man, like use it for sure. There are benefits to that for sure. Now the negatives are looking at certain ingredients that are in those things. So that can have for sure an effect on the digestive system. Where you might start to build up a bit of a different microbiome from those things. So like the sucralose sugars that are in there have been shown to have a bit of a negative effect on gut microbiome. I think Greg might have some data on that type of stuff as well. But in the whole, if you're getting to the body fat level that you want to be at, and that's allowing you to stay on point with those calories, and you're not eating like 50% of your calories from that, by all means, like 10%, 20% of that is going to be totally fine, and you're staying on point. So the sustainability of the thing I'm looking at first. Can you stick to what we need you to do? And then we take it from there, right? So I'm totally happy with people doing that. Now the other thing to think of, because there's one thing that stood out in that question, Austin. I showed you on the call. Tips and tricks to keep a sweet, loving fat kid at heart like me sane while cutting. So that's like I look at that and go, well, that's an environment thing for sure. That can be a thing from being a young kid where you eat certain things and there's certain flavors and textures and things that you're used to that bring up memories that you like to go back to, right? So one of mine, I'm half Italian, so one of mine's eating certain things in Italy when I go back, and I love the taste of those things. I love the texture of those things. So those are things that stick in my head, and I like to go and eat those things, right? So I'm very aware that if I do eat them a lot, I'm putting body fat on, no problem, right? Now, the other flip of the coin that I think about this is the genetic side of things as well. So we look at, there are big research studies based on this now. There's one called the FTO gene. There's an MC4R gene, which the MC4R is basically, I remembered it because I called it the buffet gene. So if somebody has this genetic defect, like a SNP on this gene, on this receptor, it basically reduces satiety signals. So if this person has one of the alleles, the SNPs on the receptor, there's a SNP there for that, and it's a negative one. A buffet is a nightmare scenario for you because you've got no satiety signal or a very reduced one. So you can eat and there's no signal to say you're full, and then you go back again, and then you go back again, and then you go back again, because it's like it's a free-for-all and there's no shut off, right? So that environment for that person is not to say that it's a big problem. It's like, well, if you're in an environment from a buffet, don't use the buffet. You go a la carte. Like there's no way you can handle a buffet because it's gonna be like a free-flowing bloodbath, right? So it's gonna go wrong. So we'd have to set up the environment for that. So you choose certain things off the menu, go a la carte, you just stay away from the buffet side of things, you know? So set
One
those
thing,
environments.
Gavin, one thing I found really hard, I think, is one of those upbringing things, and probably the same for almost like a lot of generation on this call, is the eat everything on your plate. And so as a parent, I get in the trap of finishing everything because it hurts me to throw out food because I was raised to not throw out food and you finish everything. And then when I became a parent and I've got four young kids, there's always leftovers, and I have to try and catch myself and go, just put it in the bin. Like, you don't have to eat it, but I have this, like, I was raised to finish what's on my plate, and I was raised to then go, well, there's leftovers, and I just eat them all, and I don't have an off switch, and I can just eat. And so I have to be like, no, just bin it.
100%, man. And I was raised the same way. And when there's actually, I was speaking to the boys about this on a call where I asked them if, as, raise your hand if you heard of the thrifty gene. No? Des, you heard of the thrifty gene? You're from the UK Isles, no? So the thrifty gene, if you've got Irish descent, you may have a potential to have the thrifty gene. So back when, like hundreds of years ago, obviously the famine in Ireland. So genetically, because there was lack of food, their genes started developing where any food intake that they had, they would hold on to those calories more because they didn't know, like the body was like, I need to hold these calories because there's obviously a lot of hunger signals going on here. So it would downregulate metabolism a little bit. Like you, especially when you're on low calorie diets, you'll like, this is the type of environment stuff I was going to talk about tonight as well. When you go very low calorie, there's certain things you have to do with your training that, like I mentioned to you just now, Rob, there's, if you go low calorie, there's no way you can output on a GBC program, like, or a 6-12-25 or a giant set. Like the food intake just isn't there to output, right? So that's automatically going to dictate the type of training volume that you're going to go for, right? So going back to that being Irish descent in the famine, the body's going to go, well, I've got no energy coming in, so you're going to do much less activity. That means there's like you're going to hold on to calories a little bit more, right? Hunger hormones are, or the hunger's always going to be high. So typically what you see now, people with Irish descent can put on body fat way faster, right? So they will genetically hold more body fat with the calories they take in genetically. Now, what's the problem with today's environment compared to that one? You got an abundance of food everywhere. And everything you see in the media is thrown at you and advertised at you to eat, buy this, do this. Like it's so easy to grab all these things. And for somebody that's genetically wired that way, like that's a hard environment to build, right? So you have to make sure the environment is there. For the most part, I honestly believe every human is genetically wired to store body fat because our genes have only really developed more, like 99.99% that they're the same. We haven't really changed genetically much over the last 100,000 years or whatever it is, but the environment has changed massively. So this is where we need to control the environment that we set up for ourselves, right? So making sure that the plate looks a specific way. If you want to drop body fat in a timely manner, which I think Kevin had a couple of questions on not losing muscle in a deficit and so on. And there's ways we can calculate this type of stuff, but if somebody wants to hit certain percentages on a weekly basis to drop body fat, like there's certain things that I would recommend. Like if you're all in, being consistent with everything you eat every day. Like the more accurate you can be with that, the faster it's going to go. Now, how many of you would like to extend, like especially if you've got a lot of body fat to lose? It's daunting to think I got to diet for like a year. Like that would break me, right? So like that's a long time to diet. So I would rather do it faster rather than slower, right? Now, again, it depends on the person. It depends on what circumstance you're in, what you can commit to in terms of training activity and how many pounds of body fat you have to lose and so on. So that's going to be part of the conversation as well. But I think I probably speak for pretty much all of us on this call. If you're going to diet, you want to do it faster rather than longer, right? You want to get in, you want to get out. So the more committed you can be to your training protocols, the easier you can set up your diet where it's like consistent. Like I think Ben agrees with me on this probably. If you can eat the same thing every day, you'll get there faster. Like same thing every day. So when I do diet, I typically eat the same things over and over and over because I know what I'm going to have. My food prep's done. I know what I'm buying in the supermarket. That saves time. Or where I'm going to buy my food and my meat and so on. Everything's the same. And then all I do is adjust the portion size of that. I just be consistent, right? My wife's like, how can you eat that thing at the same thing every day? I'm like, just takes one thing off my mind. Like, I don't have to think about anything else. Like, it's done. What are you eating tonight? You know exactly what I'm eating. Like, there's no conversation, right? If you're married and or you got a partner, some of the main topics of conversation normally is like, what are we having for dinner? I'm like, we don't need to have that conversation. You know exactly what I'm having. It's typically the same two or three things, you know, the same weight of it over and over and over, right? So setting that up for somebody with those types of genes is gonna help a lot, and it's gonna help you get it faster. The other thing with eating sugary based foods or like foods that re like you really want to overeat and overeat, typically it can be a dopamine thing. So I think Ben's spoken about this again on podcasts where we look at foods and I don't think it's a nutrition problem a lot of people have. Like, how many of you know that if you eat vegetables and protein and fish and meat, you're going to get in pretty good shape? Like, 99% of people know that. Like, I'd probably say 100% of people know that. So I don't think it's a nutrition problem. You know what to eat. I think it's an environment problem. I think there's a behavior problem as well, and there's a genetic problem, right? So a lot of the environment you see today is very dopamine driven. So you'll have people scrolling on their phones late at night, and I've done it, right? Everybody, I honestly believe everybody's done it. But what are we doing in that moment? Every time we scroll, we're getting a dopamine hit. That's what we want, right? So it's going to make us feel that. It's going to feel good for that few seconds, right? Same thing with food. If you're going to eat something very sugary, you're going to get a dopamine hit. You eat something that makes you feel good, it's a dopamine hit. So sometimes we're looking at to drive that up a little bit more, a little bit more. At the end of the day, has anybody ever got home at the end of a day and they just sat on the sofa and they're just like zoned out? Like absolutely zoned out. Yep. And your wife's talking to you and you got the mufflers on. Do you know what the mufflers are? Big mufflers, like someone's talking, and you don't know what they're saying. Like, repeat what I just said. I was like, oh, you can't say, right? You just zoned out. Like, that's a crash. Like, it's a big day, but now you're going to try and bring dopamine up, which is going to give you that little bit of a dopamine's basically motivation, right? So, Austin, yeah, there you go. That's Austin at the end of every day. So I'd probably say the sugar monster inside of you, brother, is more of a dopamine thing. Right. So how do we raise dopamine naturally? Well, one, we want to have parasympathetic arousal at some point of the day, for sure. We want to calm our nervous system down because the more sympathetic you are, the more dopamine reserve you start to deplete a little bit. And then you're going to try and get that dopamine. Once you crash a little bit, you're going to try and get that dopamine from somewhere else. The easiest way to do it is food, like one of the easiest ways, right? So there's that aspect as well, right? So the fact that you've created an environment where you can still get that sugar monster feel, like you got those foods that you can go to, but you're still able to stick to that plan, is a good environment to set up. Otherwise, it's going to be a free for all, and you're not going to lose body fat, right? So you're going to go for that ice cream, you're going to go for whatever. So you've manifested a great little environment for yourself where you can still have those little things, but the underlying thing we have to address is parasympathetic activity, calming yourself down a little bit, making sure the nervous system is regulated a touch. The other thing as well is dopamine is made in the body from an amino acid called tyrosine. So tyrosine is found in protein. So you've got a good coach with Greg in your corner that's biochemistry wise, he's going to have a real good understanding of that. So potentially, higher protein intake could help. It could be supplemented with tyrosine, but there's a few other factors in there as well that need to be considered in terms of when you supplement with tyrosine. And that is also going to affect the cortisol system as well. So you have to, there's a few things to consider there. But Greg will definitely have your corner with that. But yeah, parasympathetic stuff. I would probably tie that in with your stretching, Austin. So I filmed the video for Greg for you. So hopefully he sent that over to you for for the couch stretch. So get your breath work in whilst you're doing that, because that's a painful sucker. Like the couch stretch is a nightmare. So do your breath work whilst you're doing that. Get as parasympathetic as you can. All good, man. I'm glad he sent it. So yeah, start there. So we'll have a chat with Greg. And but mate, if you've set that environment up, you should be good. And then we'll work on the other stuff in the background. So does that make sense, boys, in terms of like how the genetic factors play into this type of stuff? I think, Seth, you had a question. Which genetic test company? So I went to a genetics course. Like I actually went and studied genetics, not on a huge level. But it was basics where they tested you there. So I had my genetics done. It was a company in Denmark called Nordic Labs. But we might be able to get you a test through Fitness Genes. So I'm going to speak to Ben about how or when these things can start to roll out. We're looking at the reason we're not doing it yet, we're looking at very specific muscle intelligence test. So we're going to be able to potentially look at how it's going to affect the way we design your programs. Right. So, for example, if you looked at my genetics and my SNPs, you'll see that I don't do very well with oxidative stress and inflammation. So, if I have issues with clearing inflammation and I do very high volume workouts and endurance-based workouts, I'm gonna drive up oxidative stress. I'm gonna drive up inflammation quite a lot. So my recoverability from that type of stuff is gonna be like, it's gonna take me quite a long time. So the other end of the spectrum then is, well, I'll do better with low rep strength training to moderate reps, more frequency, lower volume, and I'll build muscle and get way better output from that. So straight away, I know pretty much based off my genetics, the way I'm going to train for the most part. But it doesn't mean to say that I can't program endurance-based workouts and so on, because I can still adapt to that. And train my body to not change my genetics by any means, but change the environment for myself. So my tissues can start to adapt to that type of scenario, right? So I just have to be careful over time with the way I program it. Does that make sense? And then supplementation comes into that, sleep, food, like all of that type of stuff. So we're actually designing a specific genetic test that's going to help us design programs better, design nutrition plans better for you guys. Does that help, Seth?
Yeah, thank you.
No problem, man. There might be another one. Robert, had a drought or famine effect. If you're in a too high calorie deficit, you tend to retain more fat and cannibalize muscle. Is that similar to the thrifty gene? To be honest, man, that's a good question. Bill, I'll grab you in a second, brother. When you look at aggressive diets, when you see the actual studies on it, I've actually got studies. And I've studied aggressive dieting quite a bit, and I've done aggressive diets quite a bit myself as well. You tend to see if people really stick to it, there's actually better outcomes from aggressive dieting. Now, there are specific ways to set them up though. So it's not just like go as low calorie as you can for as long as you can. There are things where you have to plan refeeds at specific times and making sure that we're putting things in place to help you get out of those things. But there's actually the loss that you see is typically initially in terms of like body weight and stuff, but it's not fat, it's more, it's not lean mass that you're losing. It's more glycogen, it's more food in the system, it's more water related mass that you actually lose. And you tend to see that you in any deficit, you're going to lose a little bit of muscle in any deficit. But it's not as much as an aggressive one as you would in a normal diet. So that's what we see with the studies. I've actually got a lot of studies on it, which I'll start a ping in the group, and I might actually do a presentation for you boys on this on another call as well if you want to hear that type of stuff. But typically what you see is, and this is why I said earlier on about like dieting for a long time, with the aggressive diets, you'll tend to see that you're in and out of a diet very fast. So typically like 8 to 12 weeks and you're pretty much done. And then you go back to your normal training, right? You can output more, you can, but again, you gotta change the way you train. You've gotta, there's no way you can output on those types of diets. So when I did one just before Costa Rica. I did it for this year, one before we went. I did it for like 4 weeks and lost about 5, 6 kilos in 4 or 5 weeks. And no problem at all. Hunger was fine. So typically the people, I'm going to be starving on those low calories. And typically you see hunger go up dramatically in the first 3 to 4 days. After day five, day six drops, like, and you don't get any hunger rise. And you just say, and now if you think about motivation, like you don't need dopamine for this because now you can see the plan is working fast and it's working very fast. So your motivation goes up because you know the end is in sight at a much faster rate. So things like that psychologically can happen as well, but it's not for everybody, man. Like there's only certain people that I'd probably do with, people that are have prepped for that type of thing. They've dieted a little bit before, they can handle certain situations, their environment is in the right place. If you just go flying in and you're trying to sort of plow through a day and just wing it for a day, it's not going to go well. Like you have to be prepped to go in and do that type of thing, and everything's locked in every day. So that's when I see them go really, really well. I've done it with a couple of clients. Chris Clark, if I'm sure Keith, did you, I'm not sure whether you met Chris Clark in Costa Rica. He's done it a couple of times. I'd only do it a few times a year, a couple of times a year if you're going to do them. I wouldn't do them consistently. But yeah, you don't tend to see the muscle mass drops that people tend to spouse. I find that a bit of a myth based off experience that I've used it with clients and myself, and in the studies as well. But you can get it's, I wouldn't say a down regulation in metabolism. It's just as you lose body weight, your body needs less calories at a lighter body weight. So you're gonna your body starts it's like an adaptation process that your body needs less calories anyway. So you do have to reconfigure your maintenance calories because you're now at a lighter body weight. So that's where the output and the activity have to come into play as well. And then you start titrating those up and then you're back to the normal calories you would have anyway at a lighter body weight. And all of a sudden, you're more insulin sensitive, your output's up, you can start storing glycogen a little bit better because your muscle mass is actually maintained. Good question, man. Bill.
Yeah, so whoops, you still there?
Yeah, we go.
Yeah, sorry, I just minimized the window. Anyway, so quick question: as far as Like I'm doing the calorie deficit thing and watching what I'm eating. I've been doing that for a couple of weeks. I'm down. Been doing it for like 4 weeks. I'm down like 2 pounds. So I'm just curious, as I'm still trying to get better, I'm doing more endurance training to get ready for an upcoming obstacle course race. But how should I be modifying my training to make sure that I don't lose muscle when I'm in a, it's not a huge deficit. It's probably between 300 to 500 calories a day, but I'm also trying to increase my training. So I'm just kind of curious, like, what are your thoughts on how to make sure that as I'm monitoring that, I can adjust accordingly to make sure that I'm still moving in the right direction
Yeah,
physically?
man. So it's endurance-based training, yeah. So yeah, I'm assuming that you got the macronutrients. You've got a good amount of protein coming in there as well. So, isn't it? So tell me about the event. What type of training have you got going on through the week?
So the event is it's a 6 mile obstacle course race.
Okay.
There's 30 obstacles, so I will run the 6 miles with the vest on, but it's not, probably not longer than a half a mile at any one juncture before you hit another obstacle. So it's a lot of grip strength. So what I'm doing right now is I'm doing a lot of like HIIT exercises, a lot of body weight squats, pull-ups, grip strength type activities, as well as push-ups and all that kind of stuff. But I would say that my typical split is I'm trying to do like a chest and shoulders day, and I'll follow that up with a 1 mile run, and then the next day I'll run 2 or 3 miles, and then the next day I'll do back or legs. I'm just kind of interfacing with that, and then during the back days are pretty short. I'll do those for 30 minutes, and then I'll do a HIIT exercise immediately after that. So I'm doing like 45 minutes, five, 6 days a week.
So it's very glycolytic, right? So basically fueled by carbohydrates. So your heart rate's going to be high doing any of those programs for sure. And then you got the running on top. So I can assume you've probably got carbohydrates more than fat, moderate amount of protein in there. The weight training is going to force your body to be like, you need to hold on to protein. You need to hold on to muscle. So the weight training there is going to be great. You're sending the signal to keep that. Your protein levels are probably in a good place, I'm assuming. So that's going to hold on to your muscle mass anyway. What's going to happen? You're only in a 300, 500 calorie deficit. So it's a pretty decent one, man. That's not too big at all. It's pretty moderate. So about 15, maybe 20%. Now, as you start to titrate volume up, so watch my hand. So imagine this is your deficit. As you titrate volume up, it goes there. So you've increased the deficit just from volume.
The
So there's a
activity.
couple of, So there's a couple of things I would consider here. One, as you titrate it up, are you looking to lose body fat to do this event? So you want to be a little bit lighter. So you've got a couple of scenarios you can play with here. If you're losing body fat at the rate that you want, and then you increase the deficit by training volume, and you start to lose fat at a faster rate and body weight at a faster rate, you've now got room to push a little bit more if you wanted to. But I would keep an eye on a few things. Number one, I would look at total daily energy for sure. Because if your energy is in a good place, I'd probably want to take advantage of just getting the fat off faster. Then you can start to titrate the calories up as you go into the event, and you'll be fresh and fatigue will drop. So that all is what I look at there. HRV, I would look at as well. So HRV is going to be a good indication of if you're recovering enough. So if recovery's down, then you want to start looking at increasing your calories a little bit. It might be only a couple of days a week you need to increase them. But if you're, again, losing body fat at a real fast rate and your HRV is plummeting, it might be okay. Let's actually bring that up a couple of hundred calories and get back to the 300 to 500 calorie deficit where I was working well as the volume goes up. Because essentially all you're looking for is keeping that consistency of body fat loss over time, right? So.
No, that's super helpful. Thank you. 'Cause I, it's these watches are cool, and they have like the HRV and all that stuff, which is great. But as far as like, oh, you ran 2 miles, you burned X amount of calories, I know those things are way off, right? Like
Yeah,
it
they
tells me
can.
I'll burn 2,500 calories in a day, and I'm like, I know my maintenance is like 2,100, so I just gotta watch it. But
You
the
can
energy
have like
level thing,
a,
I think it's good.
yeah, you can have like a 20 to 30% difference in those. I was very neurotic. Like you can imagine me being a geek on this type of stuff. I love geeking out on everything. I would test a lot of things. Like I would, the way I knew my Aura, my Polar heart strap, and the Apple Watch. I was testing them all at the same time. I was writing numbers down. I was like, I'm doing this workout, and I found that the steps were pretty accurate from the Aura to the Apple. The sleep from the Apple Watch, I've got the Ultra 2 watch. I don't think they sell it anymore because some bloody copyright thing, but I've got it. And the sleep on that to the Aura was like pretty spot on, like pretty nailed down. And the heart rate when I use it for training on the bike was within one beat per minute out from the Polar heart strap. So I was like, one watch, done. Now, if I'm using that all the time, all I'm looking for now is a trend. Is it going in the right direction or not? I'm not too concerned about, like, am I 2 minutes over my deep sleep or things like that. I'm looking at what is the trend over time. Then I'll implement and put a strategy in place if it's not going the way I want it. But you're correct, man. They won't all be as accurate as what they make out to be or what they play to be. But the HRV, the resting heart rate's a good one if you can't track your HRV consistently, boys. Resting heart rate's a great indication of that because as your HRV goes down, you'll typically see your resting heart rate go up. And you want your resting heart rate to be low or as low as possible, right? So that's a good indication of recovery. So the lower you rest it, so when you start to get more stressed, you'll notice your resting heart rate go up and up and up and up and up. So that's a good indication of recovery as well. So keep an eye on that, Bill. I want to make sure I cover. I think we had a question on. So we had a question on aggressive dieting, which I think I've covered from Rob as well. So aggressive diets. So that I think in terms of like losing muscle, typically what I want to be, like you can lose this faster than 1%. So I'd like to work between 0.5 and 1%. So this will cover the question I had on the WhatsApp group in terms of what's being like finding a balance of being too aggressive and risk losing muscle mass and so on. At a consistent level, because I know, especially with us, we've got lives and we want to make sure that if things are sustainable as well. And we've got a lot going on, and there's family and things going on as well. But I find a sweet spot can be 0.5% to 1% per week. We're hitting that, we're going to be in a good place consistently, right? So having that tap out about the 1% per week mark definitely puts you in a place where you're really not going to lose any muscle. Like it's, I've never seen it be massive at all. So, but a 1% body weight drop consistently over a few weeks, 10, 12 weeks, that's a lot of body weight, right? That's a lot of body fat to lose. So that's a good place to start in terms of that. What are you looking at for grams of protein per weight when doing aggressive cuts? That's a good question, John. I'll come to that one now in a sec, mate. Back to the weight loss. Yeah, so I typically do 0.5 to 1% a week. So you need to track that though. So if people can actually take their body weight per day, I would take the average across the week and I would look at the average drop week to week and making sure that that's between 0.5 and 1%. Now, as that starts to drop and slow down, so as your body weight comes down, that's naturally, like I said earlier, that's going to start to slow down just because the body's going to need less calories to play with, right? So that deficit becomes smaller the more body weight that you lose. So then you just adjust the nutrition, or like Bill's going to do, adjust his training volume to improve his fitness and stuff as well. That's when you start to manipulate the nutrition to keep within that range of 0.5 to 1%. So that's where we can start to keep it. Now it depends on how much body fat you have to lose. So typically, the more body fat you have, the more aggressive you could probably go because you're at way less risk of losing muscle. The leaner you are, if you're very, very lean, the smaller deficits that I want to keep because you are at way more risk of losing muscle mass because there's less body fat to play with. So it's keeping in mind those two things as well. So if somebody's very lean, I'll keep that deficit very, very small, as small as possible. Sometimes even like a 5% deficit is all you need to go, especially if you've got somebody that's 8% body fat and they need to get that down and they got to get to a photo shoot and they're going on stage. It's like that's going to just take that little bit longer to eke out to drop all of that body fat off. And you just got to be patient with that. Because as soon as you start to titrate that aggressiveness up, you're at way more risk of losing body fat the leaner you are, muscle the leaner you are. Well, body fat, the more aggressive you can go. So that's why I do use those aggressive diets if the mindset's right there. In terms of protein intake, John, when like you're looking at around 2 grams per kilo to 2.2 grams per kilo, I find a good sweet spot. So that's around the 1 gram per pound mark. That can be pretty decent. It's been shown to have great satiety levels at that point. So all I'm looking at there is finding a sweet spot for protein that allows hunger to stay away as much as possible, and you've still got enough calories coming in to fuel performance. So I want to make sure there's enough calories in place there for that. But you can have protein resynthesized glycogen as well. So even at higher protein amounts, I'm a fan of pushing protein very high as well, especially in, I know Rob, you're going into muscle building phase. I'm a big fan of high protein intakes in muscle building phases. When you've just got lean and you want a lean gain phase and you want to keep body fat at a minimum, as you're going into a surplus, I'm a huge fan personally of going up to sometimes 3 grams per kilo, sometimes 3.4 grams per kilo. So you look at the studies based off high, very high proteins, that's super high protein intakes. There's still no detrimental effects to the body unless you've got pre-existing conditions, and then I wouldn't use that type of strategy. But there's no detrimental effects like kidneys and things like that with protein. There's no studies to show that at all. But what you do find is, now here's the kicker. There's no more muscle increase. After you've hit your 2.2 grams per kilo, going to 3 grams per kilo won't increase more muscle mass. At that 2.2 grams is pretty much the cutoff point that's going to maximize protein or muscle building from what we've seen in the study so far. So there's no more muscle mass increase on more protein intake. But the reason I like to go higher is when you compare the two, the group in the study that did 3 to 3.4 grams compared to 2 to 2.2 grams stayed leaner for much longer. So the time period is way, I think it was like 8 to 16 weeks longer in terms of keeping body fat off. So their body composition was way leaner for longer in a surplus, right? Maintenance to a surplus. So what that means is if I'm going to put on muscle, I want to be as anabolic as possible, as long as possible, without doing a mini cut. So the more frequent you mini cut, you're catabolic. I know if I want to put on a lot of muscle mass, I want to be as anabolic as possible, then I want to be catabolic. So if I can keep you, let's say, for example, going through a surplus, people go, I'm going to do a bulk for 12 weeks, or I'm going to put on muscle in 12 weeks, and I'm going to do a 12-week cut. Well, shit, you're just like 1-to-1 ratio. That doesn't make sense unless you're really aggressive with certain things, right? And then typically what you'll see is they'll be at the same pretty much point as they were when they started the bulk to the cut. It's the same body shape. So what I typically like to do is have the protein higher, put body weight on, keep pushing body weight past the 12-week mark, past the 16-week mark, past the 20 mark, past the 24 mark. I do like 6 month targets for muscle building, sometimes 8, if we can keep state, depending on how lean you are. And then once we hit a certain body fat point, because you're going to put some body fat on as you go, you think if I've kept you in a surplus for 6 months, and then we do an 8 week cut, and then we go back into muscle building again. For the whole year, you've been anabolic for like a good 75% of the year. That's a lot of muscle mass. And that's where people I find, if you can manage that type of thing and you're very consistent with your nutrition, you'll this is where you hear stories like, Ben, we can put on this amount of muscle on somebody, and people don't, they just like, you can't do that without gear and so on. Like you can. If you're smart and you can be consistent with the things you need to follow through with, you know? So that's what I would look at with protein intake, John. Like setting that point where satiety is in a good place, you've got enough calories coming in for performance. And obviously, depending on the goal after that, and you want to start putting muscle on, personally, I'm a big fan of just taking that protein up a little bit more just to keep body comp in a good place. And then we can push it where we need to, then basically. No problem, Rob. Thanks. It's good to see you, man. Thanks, brother. Great questions tonight. I won't keep you too much longer, boys. I know Keith's got a. I want to make sure I touch on Keith's as well. So he had cultivating self-belief. behaviors, practices, visualization, things like that, mate. So unmute yourself, man. Give us a little rundown on that, and we'll wrap up with that one today. That's a good one.
Sure, man.
Thanks,
I
Bill.
think for me, I think I've spoken about this quite a lot on the calls. The gap between where you are now and where you're going. And I think it's very easy in those moments. I think you talked about the dopamine hits, which I think is something that you can easily fall into. But seeing where, particularly if you've been carrying weight for a while, seeing where the goal is, if you don't have that belief that you're going to get there, and I think that's been my biggest Achilles heel, like largely 70, 80% really good. Don't eat rubbish. Don't go out and junk food. Keep the exercise up. But it's the little increments of, well, I'm still miles away, so I can let that slide, or I've still got a long way to go, so I'll just have, extra carbs or those kind of things. And I think something I've been talking to Andrew about is now I'm on a fairly harsh shred at the moment. He's trying to get me down, and I've got to a point where I can see where the end goal is, and now I'm closer to the end goal than I am to the start. I feel like every time I don't veer off, it's like another step towards
Yeah, man.
getting me closer. So I think, yeah, it's interesting for me to think about that. And then it's just, yeah, everyone's different, but like thoughts around like their behaviors. Like I know we've talked about, doing 15 press ups if you're going to eat something stupid or things like that. But just in your experience, when things get tough, because obviously tough is different for all of us if you're going on stage or if you're just starting, little mindsets, any practices, behaviors around, look, if you're just starting, have that end goal in mind, or in that moment, have a little mantra, have something like just because you've got so much experience, just your thoughts on that, man.
There's a few I'd unpack there, man. We could go deep on this as well. It might have to go on to a group call, even a one-to-one call as well, man, because there's some things that I touch with clients. Not all clients that need that, but there's a lot of I wouldn't say trauma with everybody, but I think everybody's got some trauma to unpack at some level. And the deeper you go with this, you'll find that, especially, I'm not saying addiction by any means, but like ADHD, there's certain things in the body that's like manifest in different ways. And typically when you delve deep and deep and deep, these things have stemmed from childhood, right? So we spoke about like what I ate when I was in Italy, and other people have different things when they were brought, like Rob was brought up in a specific way and they eat certain things and it brings back memories of those things, right? But sometimes it's like little, like I've gone through this with my family. Like I'm going through this right now with my wife, where we're unpacking a lot of things that's happened to her when she was young, and it's manifested in the way her body has developed now as a woman, and the way she goes through a day, right? So the things she tells herself in her head, and it provides these actions that she takes in the day, and she doesn't even realize it and where it's come from. It's like we start to unpack that and go, well, do you realize you do this when this happens? And she's like, no. I'm like, well, let's think about why you do that. And then we have a discussion about it, like, well, did your dad used to say this when you were young? Yeah, he did. Well, how would that impact you from here? Do you know what I'm saying? It's like all of those things that you're taught when you were young are ingrained in there. So your
100%.
natural tendencies for behavior are developed from a young age. And the biggest thing that I tried to sort of pass to, and we discussed this, was like, it's not your dad's fault. It wasn't your mum's fault. It's just that's how they were brought up. So they don't know any different. They're just doing the best they can in that situation, you know? So I think behaviors are developed from a younger age, say that. So we'll start there for today in terms of that. So I think understanding those behaviors and then looking at, well, I'm in full control over those things, and unpacking that on some level, and then putting strategies in place to know when those behaviors are coming in. There's different ways to do that, right? So there's one that's not beating yourself up if something happens and understanding certain things. But then you've got, like, for example, myself, if I've done this in the past with diets, where I've got to certain places where I'm hungry and there's certain things in the house where I'm telling myself I don't need to eat that as I'm putting it in my mouth, right? And I'll eat it. Like it's going down. And I'm honestly telling myself, don't eat it, Gav. And it's like, oh, well, as I'm telling myself not to eat it, it's in my mouth. And I've realized that. So now my challenge becomes, I'm keeping it in the house and I'm not going to eat it. So then I'll like tick off every day that I don't, I'll purposely keep it in my house. And then that's a challenge to myself. And every day is a win. So if you look at the things that we try and instill when people come into into Muscle Intelligence, we want every day to be a success, 100% success for every day. So it's not the fact that like the end goal is achieved first. That's going to be there. But if we start hitting a win every day and we win the day 100%, whatever the task is, then you build motivation because you're like, shit, I can actually, like, I'm building wins here. So we build mini wins, they build the bigger wins, and those bigger wins build the even bigger wins. So that's the mantra that I want you to start instilling in there is like, don't think of that end thing, like chunk it down and go, well, if this is the big goal, what does that look like chunked down, right? So if I'm gonna, I don't know, somehow make $100 million, some people go, well, that's impossible. I'm like, well, in my mind go, well, other people have done it, so they've somehow done it. There's a way to do it. And it's not looking at the big picture first, it's working backwards and go, well, what do I need to start with today? And then if I build that, so okay, what's the next part of the puzzle? What's the next? And then you just chunk it into little mini wins or mini goals that lead to that big goal. And then you just tick those off. Same thing. So I think that's probably what sounds like what Andrew's done for you straight away is like, that's going to be the end goal. But first we need to hit this milestone. And then within that milestone, there might be five things you have to check off every day to make sure this milestone is hit. Once that's hit, well, now you've built those habits in place. So now you need new ones because the plan that's going to get you from A to B is probably going to be different from B to C because your body's in a different place. So like I said, with once you've lost your body fat, well, now the plan's totally different because you probably need a surplus to build muscle. So that's a different nutrition plan straight away. That's a different protein intake straight away. That's a different carbohydrate intake straight away. That's a different training plan straight away. So the goal is like the goal's different, which means the plan's different, you know? So I think definitely building them into chunks is definitely the strategy to do that for sure. And that builds motivation, that builds wins because as soon as you've like hit that fat loss target, that before, like you think that's so tough to achieve, I've never done it, and you actually do it. Like the world's your oyster, because now you know you can do anything, right? And I think that's I reference Ben a lot because like he's inspired me a lot, man. Like watching Ben go, I watched him when he was a young aspiring bodybuilder through Charles, and that's how I first came to light of who Ben was. I was like, this guy's a machine. Like, there's just no off switch. But he would challenge himself and set those goals and just knock them off one at a time. And there was just no way that he wasn't going to achieve it, which was phenomenal, you know? So, but it was building those wins. And that's why it's instilled into our system is like, because he knows it works if we can find the right things. And it's sometimes we have to navigate them differently and working with the coach to go, well, this is where I'm butting my head at the moment. How do I get around this? And then boom, we just clear that one out and then we make another one, you know? So I think that's a good place to start, man. I think you're on the right track for it already. But yeah, unpacking that other stuff is
Yeah, definitely.
it's another ball game altogether, you know.
Andrew has done everything. So it is just for me. Like he's done all the steps across the bridge of, looking back and going, well, this is me. It's now, this is where I need to be. And it's the same as you. Like I literally sit with things and I'm like I say, it's never anything bad. It's not chips or anything. It's like an extra bit of carb or it's an extra like something to go in. And it's like, you don't need it. You don't need it. You don't need it. It's like, why are you doing it? So it's that mindset of sitting with it and, getting it back and breaking it down, not into the longer term. The short term, I think, is a great idea. So appreciate that,
I
man.
think the one thing that I've realized, especially when it's fat loss, man, is fat loss can be easy and can be hard at the same time. But the one thing I had to change my mindset on was like when I got hungry, and sometimes I got really hungry, I was like, yes, I'm getting closer. Because as soon as that hunger kicks in, you know you're losing body fat 100%. So I'm like, that's what I want to feel. So the more I knew that that was coming in, the more I knew body fat was coming off, the more motivation I had. I was like, yep, this is working faster now. Let's go. It's but like the more hunger came in, I was like, yes, let's go. You know? So once you flip that mindset around, it's like Ben when he used to chase the pain of the like the pain of the muscle is like, now the session starts. Like, this is where the set starts. I'm like, most people end at this point. Like, they just give up. And that's where, like, training with Ben for all these years now, I'm like, it's a sadistic thing, but it's like, yep, here we go. I'm getting Greg on it now when we train legs. We typically train legs on Tuesday or Wednesday, and squatting on the pendulum squat and so on. I'm like, come on, boy, let's go. Let's whack it up a little bit more. You know, it's easier then when you've got a training partner to go with as well. But it's just flipping that mindset and going, yeah, this is where I got to go. And the
Yeah.
more you do it, the more it becomes normal. And then you become what Goggins would say was the uncommon amongst the common people, right? So that's where people don't go. Like, they just don't. And that's where you see the difference between people that get the results and people that just stay around this level where they just go through this cycle of they get a bit and then they stop and then they get a bit and they stop, you know? And then that's where I unpack that or speak about that, like that hidden potential trauma that's this potentially underlying underneath, you know? Do they feel they deserve that type of result? You know, do they sabotage that a lot themselves because of underlying things? So I think a couple of books or writers that I would probably listen to on that type of stuff, if any of you feel that that could be something for you, is a guy called Gabor Maté. Great. He's got some great books. The most recent one, I think, is called The Myth of Normal. It's a very intense read, but he's a physician from Canada, and he's helped people with a lot of diseases like cancer and so on as well. But he's like, the body will manifest disease from trauma. And I think a lot of his stuff came from drug addicts in Vancouver, because he was a physician in Vancouver. And I think Vancouver's got one of the highest rates in the world for drug addicts. But there's a very high percentage, and I'm talking super, super high. Thank you, John. No problem at all, brother. Super high percentage of drug addicts were abused when they were young. So you think of that hidden trauma, and they're just trying to numb that pain, man. Like, there's deep pain there. So, like, those things, it doesn't have to be painful by any means in terms of like results for fat loss and so on, but just those underlying hidden things, you know? There's some good stories in those books that he's got, man. So maybe check those out too.
Appreciate it, man. Thank you.
No problem at all. Boys, I know we've gone over. It's Des, 12:15 for us over here. So I can see you dropping a little bit. We've got to make sure we look after our beauty sleep, mate. We don't stay this sexy for no reason, you know? Yeah. You boys get some good sleep. Have a good time
Gavin, I'm
wherever you
just
are. Seth.
Gavin, I'm just glad I'm not the only one who's putting stuff in his mouth going, this is really bad for me. I shouldn't be doing it. Yeah.
Mate, it happens to all of us. Even Greg, man.
All right.
Don't let him say otherwise.
Yeah.
Don't let him say otherwise, man. It happens to all of us. But yeah, if you need any
Cheers.
support,
Thanks,
anything,
Gavin.
always get in the WhatsApp group. We're there for you, and keep pumping the questions in there, man. Keith, let me know when you're back in the
Be
UK,
good, Gav.
brother.
See ya. Thank you.
June-ish, I think, man.
June?
Yeah, I can say.
Perfect, mate. You keep me posted, all right?
Will do, brother. Thanks,
Love
man.
you, man. Boys, have a good one.